Hi, everybody. Good morning. It's a Thursday, 16th of November. Joining us this morning on his way to Sunny Fortuna, Mr. Merritt Perry. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
You have a vest.
It's that time of year.
I thought it was always about 64, 65 and sunny in Fortuna.
It's supposed to be 67 today.
And you're wearing a vest.
It's cold this morning.
You are a North Coast kid, aren't you?
With a short sleeve.
Yeah, okay. We won't talk about your other attire at this point. Are you ready for... Oh, we're into a new category, by the way. I kind of warn everybody. This is now customs. Not like Border Patrol customs, although that would be a nice ironic parody at this point, wouldn't
it? Maybe.
Yeah. Are you ready? Now, this is
ready as ever.
This might be applicable for us, but there will be many who see the humor in this question.
Okay.
When did men start shaving every morning? Honest to God, that's the next one up.
When did men start shaving every morning? It must have been during the Industrial Revolution when they were working around equipment and couldn't have long beards.
Ooh, you're like thinking this morning. All right. In many cultures, shaving is forbidden. The reason we in the West lather up every morning can be traced directly back to Alexander the Great. Well, he's kind of on the West a little bit. Before he seized power, all European men grew beards. But because young Alexander wasn't able to muster much facial hair, he scraped off his peach fuzz every day with a dagger. Not wanting to offend the great warrior, those close to him did likewise, and soon shaving became the custom.
Wow.
Something else we can trace back to Alexander the Great, huh?
Yeah. Not even close on that one.
Well, no, really not. Oh, boy. You guys taking advantage of the sunny weather? Are those construction projects continuing?
Yeah, we're still moving ahead. We have a few in construction. We have some paving we're going to be doing on 12th Street for a project that... We took a lot of underground utilities through an intersection, part of the undergrounding project and part of the storm drain project on 12th Street. So that's happening.
Isn't it cool how it looks when the utilities are undergrounded?
It's pretty nice.
It's like something's gone. It's clear and pristine.
You can see the sky.
Like a neighborhood now.
Yeah, it's uncluttered.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. It's taken, I think PG&E finished their initial work. Probably was 2.5 years ago, but then you have the communications companies, AT&T, whatever the cable is called now, Altice. And so they take, you know, it's been a couple of years and they're just starting to put those cables down and put them on spools and the poles will be gone. But it takes a long time. I was under the impression it would all happen instantly after PG&E got out there.
Once the trench was out?
Yeah, but not the case.
Those manhole, totally unrelated, I know, but those manhole covers that we see, there's like a cone that's underneath them, right? And then you're able to get down into the pipes?
It's like a vertical concrete pipe, if you will, big enough for a person. At the top, there's usually kind of a tapered cone that goes from, you know, 3 or 4 feet to whatever the manhole size is.
You ever been down one of those?
Yeah.
How weird is it?
It depends. You know, most of the time, you know, there's a lot of them that are pretty shallow and you can jump in and the flow line's right there and, you know, look at what you need to look at. And, but it's not that unusual. You know, when they get deeper, it's a little stranger and you're supposed to always have the, equipment to pull you out, a tripod with a cable per OSHA standards. So it's a little tricky.
In case you hit your head or something.
Yeah, you should harness up and have that connected when you enter those. So it makes it more cumbersome, you know, than just using a ladder and climbing down those.
The small, skinny guys always get that detail?
A lot of times.
Good. Yeah. I know I must be claustrophobic to a certain extent. I
think
probably getting stuck in one of those things.
Yeah, better than a trench.
Yeah. But trenches are open to the sky.
So is a manhole if the lid's off.
Yeah, as long as you're straight underneath it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, some of the guys that have to go crawling or walking.
Yeah,
or,
not too many of them, at least in Fortuna, can you really walk down a long pipe. You know, usually it's just a vertical piece, and then you can access. It's a place to access a pipe. But there's not like in the movies where, you know, you're chasing somebody down a tunnel.
Yeah, or they're driving a car.
Or they're driving a car.
Yeah,
or a
motorcycle. It doesn't happen. Yeah.
None of that. We don't. I can't think of any that we have that are that big.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Other construction projects, the outside of the police facilities, moving forward. They have Kern and Construction down there doing some of the site work for the prime contractor Sequoia, and they are doing the grading, installing the new utilities to the building, power, gas.
So you were able to get the PG&E hookup blessing?
Yeah.
You see that with a smile on your face. So.
Yeah.
So that was a pre-existing that is just being relocated?
It was pre-existing, but it's treated like a new service. So, yes, we were able to make that happen.
How did you make contact with PG&E to get that done? Did you have to go through Allison and the PR? You're not going to give up the super secret, are you?
No. We submitted an application just like everyone else and handled it that way.
You waited 6 months before somebody got back to you?
A lot of this was done by our public works director, so he... He was a point man on that. I just know when they're doing it.
Uh-huh. You're not even going to share, are you?
I'll just say that I've had a lot of folks, with pivotal projects happen. And, sometimes when they have a really significant delay, like we had the Lutheran Home for the aging that we talked about, they had some things ready to go. And PG&E was the last piece. And I did get a hold of PG&E, and they were really good about being responsive when they recognized the situation that the applicant was in.
Yeah, I understand that there's a project in Eureka. Everything was all done, was ready to be opened, and PG&E hadn't hooked them up.
Yeah.
Not having people here that you can just kind of go knock on a door.
Yeah.
Makes it tough.
I think it's frustrating. People were used to having a pretty defined timeline and process. And, when somebody's...
Some certainty. Yeah.
When somebody's investing in a new building or an expansion or something that requires that power, I mean, there's a lot of money at stake. And when you're waiting for your utility, I think people get very frustrated because that's one of the things for so long everybody's just taken as a given.
Well, you pay the money and you kind of anticipate you're going to get service, services and customer service.
Right.
Instead of leave your number and, we'll let you know what month we'll call you back.
Right. I don't think it's exactly like that, but it may seem like it.
Good. I hope not. For many reasons. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry. Merritt, a lot of the infrastructure that you guys and gals focus on are things that are necessary, but we seem to find out, public seems to find out about it just as the dirt is being dug or a contract is being let. There must be replacement schedules for everything because, that's part of what you guys have to do. Is there another major one that's coming up in the next 5 to 10 years that you're starting to put a little attention towards?
Yeah. The biggest one that we have, first of all, we do a capital improvement program. And so we have it. It's pretty specific for the first year. And then it looks ahead at 5 years. So the things that are in years 3, 4, and 5 are usually a little less certain. So, and subject to change in cost or scope or whatever. But the big one that we have coming up is a wastewater treatment plant project to comply with regional board standards, and that's really the big one.
That's right, really high on the old sexy list too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do most people even know where it's located?
I think generally people know where it's located, but it's one of those things that you take for granted. It's out of sight and out of mind, and the only time people get worked up about it is when you increase their bill.
Fair enough.
Right. Otherwise, it's just you flush the toilet and it goes away. And then it's you don't think about it. Or water, you turn on the tap, it works, and we don't give it a second thought.
Or the roads don't flood.
Yeah, or you, as long as you can drive there and there's no traffic or potholes, and it's you don't think about it.
Everybody's happy.
Everybody's happy. So, yeah, you know, but we have, you know, the big driver for most of the treatment plant expansion projects and improvement projects around here are the Regional Water Quality Control Board regulations. So, there's no static condition for a wastewater treatment plant.
Who are those people, by the way?
The regional board? They're appointed by the governor, just like the public utility commissions or another. And
well, I know we all feel very warm and fuzzy towards those folks.
Yeah. A lot of times, you know, there's a variety of people from different backgrounds, but a lot of times they have some background in water quality, and that's the reason that they would be put on there.
Is there regional representation on that, or is it experts in the field and they just kind of, you know, bring people in?
It depends. I mean, in the past, I know that there's been local folks on there that I knew, and folks from Sonoma County and folks from Humboldt County. And so there's been some really good representatives on their regional board.
So you had somebody you can reach out to if you need to.
Yeah, but at that level, typically what you do is you work through staff, right? So, you know, like I said, there's no static condition. The regional board is always striving to improve water quality. And so what that translates to for an entity that has to treat wastewater is ever-increasing regulations. And so
do they really want a zero detect on everything? Is that the ultimate goal?
No, I think the ultimate goal is better always, you know, like always moving towards a higher quality water condition.
More expensive always.
Right. So
it's kind of how that translates to most of us.
That's exactly right. You always, you know, there's always something you could be doing to improve your effluent quality, you know, unless you go straight to, you know, like a reverse osmosis system where you push all that water through a membrane and it comes out clear, you know, water on the other side. But that's really expensive. It takes a lot of energy to have those mechanical type treatment systems opposed to natural treatment systems where you have, you know, biological organisms eating the waste and processing it. And
you mean like the Arcata swamp? That
well, right. Even concept. Arcata's, yeah. You know, they have a big project that they're doing right now too. And I honestly don't know what exactly is.
But that model rather
right.
than
but you're, yeah. And, you know, there's different issues with their plant that I'm not as familiar with, but essentially, they want to, you know, the regional board is going to demand to see a higher quality effluent. And every time you do a permit cycle, they're 5-year permit cycles, you see those.
Ramp it up.
You see those effluent limits decrease.
Is it?
Or, yeah.
Is it beyond what happens naturally?
Is what?
You grab a cup of water out of the eel
right
above.
Yeah,
the plant, and then you grab a cup coming out.
Let's just say it's not uncommon.
Can you compare the two?
You might see effluent quality be higher than the background concentration, at a higher quality.
English.
Sometimes effluent might be treated better to a better standard than the background condition.
The right? naturally occurring.
Yeah,
one.
So if you're in a situation where there's really low flow in the eel and there's a lot of algae, you know, one of the things you measure is total suspended solids or temperature or. You know,
I'm thinking, let's use the Smith, because that's kind of referenced as this pure and great and wonderful, and not saying that it isn't, but...
Yeah.
So you get a cup of water from that, and then you grab one from below the sewer
typically
treatment.
The Smith River is going to have better water quality than anything being put into it. So, yeah, and okay. That's an important watershed and certainly one to protect.
So this is a fair standard to be chasing rather than
I think the public wants that. I mean, I think the public desires to see... you know, our receiving waters and surface waters where people fish and recreate. I think in general, the public wants to see a higher water quality. And so I think that's kind of the mandate for the regional board and for regional board staff. So
what about well water? Is that something?
So they do.
Without any influence from anything else.
The regional board regulates beneficial uses of water. So if you're going to take treated wastewater and you're going to put it down a well, right? You have to demonstrate that you're not degrading groundwater as well. So there is protections for groundwater, anti-degradation policies that the regional board has in place. So if you're going to do a new project, you have to show that you're not going to do something detrimental to beneficial uses. And it could be recreation. It could be drinking water quality of groundwater. It could be, you know, aquatic habitat for larval stages of fish. It could be any number of things. So There's a pretty comprehensive review of anything you're going to do to make sure it's not impacting a beneficial use, and you have to leave it basically better than
it was when you found it.
Yeah, you can't degrade it. Yeah.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning with Fortuna City Manager Merritt Perry. Now, when it comes to some of the infrastructure, obviously the general community is unaware of a lot of this stuff because it's your day-to-day, and we just kind of reap the benefits of these types of things. When there are public workshops or presentations, does anybody show up to those either? Unless you have a really large dollar sign associated with it and people are concerned about, and rightly so, the financial impact to their home?
Yeah, you know, I think in general, since the COVID times, that participation has dropped off generally. I feel like it's slowly rebuilding. You know, we're seeing, you know, different things like Chamber of Commerce meetings, you know, right after the pandemic, they weren't really well attended, but we're seeing more and more attendance grow. People are getting back into the habit of going to public meetings, but you know, I think typically at a public meeting for a project, you'll see people who are interested. Maybe it has an effect on them. You know, maybe what is being created is something that they think is valuable for the community. So people who are generally interested or concerned, you know, proponents and people who are concerned are usually the ones that show up. And then you'll have media usually. But in general, do you just see, you know, an average citizen who wants to know what's going on? I'm going to say not really. You know,
any more success with budget presentations? I know you guys have the big whoop-de-whoop and try to make it a community event.
As
an outreach.
The whoop-de-whoop being the State of the City breakfast that we
you like
do
that one,
in
huh?
January. The whoop-de-whoop. Yeah. I mean, well, that's what I'm going to put. That's going to be my title slide. Here's the big whoop-de-whoop for the city this year.
Well, good. Give me enough advance notice and I'll be in the back.
I'll give you a credit.
Yeah, there'll be a standing O in the back of one.
Yeah.
Do you get a lot of attendance of just general citizenry there for people to kind of understand the city's up to?
There's a few people that watch really closely and they attend meetings and, you know, they're not interested in it. You know, we have a few people that show up at our meetings just in interest in local government, but generally
the groupies.
Not many for us. You know, I think other cities have more attendance and there's more things that are being demanded, but you know, I don't know. There's one of two ways you could take it. You know, one way is if people aren't upset about something and they generally approve of what you're doing, they're not going to show up and
full trust and faith.
Well, I think if it affects people and they're upset, that's one way to get a lot of people to show up really quickly. You know, raising rates and things like that.
You start a rumor,
create a traffic jam. You know, there's any number of ways you can upset people. You know, the classic I remember from City of Fortuna, even before I was there, is, you know, proposed building a water tank in Runner Park, right? And I just remember seeing, you know, a couple hundred people, and they had expand the council chambers to the maximum and open the accordion doors. And it's like, okay, if 200 people are showing up pissed off about something, you might want to rethink what you're...
right.
Yeah, because each one of those people probably represents a... you know, 10 that didn't show up, and you know, pretty soon your numbers are not favorable for people upset with a project.
Do you get a lot of feedback? Is there a communication loop that either you as staff get or that the electeds get, or I mean, how do you know you're on the right trail and people are happy?
Yeah, you get feedback. I mean, I'm going to present at the chamber meeting on Monday and just kind of go through some of the city projects and things that are happening. And, you know, there's a lot of people that come up and say, you know what, I really appreciate you working on this project, or, you know, I'm glad you're looking at this. And then you'll get other people who say, hey, I'm really concerned about speeding on my road, right? You know, we had a woman who came to a council meeting and wrote us a letter about high speeds on one of our roadways. And so we put a temporary radar feedback sign out there, which also has a counter so we can get a sense of how fast cars are.
Is that one of the flashing trailers?
Yeah, we did some patrols. Yeah, and then we had some officers who monitored and parked there to kind of see what was happening and wrote some tickets. And then we ended up putting a stationary radar feedback sign because it's a transition from a 35 to a 25. And so that lets people know. And, you know, we try to do what we can. Those are the things that I really like doing. When people call and have some complaint about something that's relatively easy to fix, why not just get that done?
Take care of it. I would think putting squad cars with officers inside would impact the traffic flow of any kind of neighborhood.
While they are present.
Well, yeah. Well, when the car isn't there that you've assigned or different hours, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy, experience is really an ugly thing, isn't it?
Yeah, right. I mean, that's a reality. People will slow down sure. when they see the cop car, and when it's gone, they do what they were going to do again.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think it would probably have been more intriguing. You probably would have had volunteers from the force also. If they could have been there in plain clothes with a couple of gallons of lemonade and just kind of sit and talk to the neighbors and see how fast cars come by.
Yeah, maybe we'll try that next time.
Well, because it's always sunny.
Right. Yeah. Hot. And you need lemonade.
Yeah.
Fortuna. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't want to throw you for a loop on that one.
Yeah. Not coffee.
Yeah. No, because then they wouldn't be there quite as often.
No.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:40.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 8:44. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry. So you missed seeing the duck fly, huh? That's interesting.
The duck fly?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, your time indicator, Winston throws a stuffed animal of choice at you, duck, crab, whatever the case may be.
Cinder block.
Yeah.
That one's called Sam, by the way.
that's where Winston gets his paybacks.
Yeah. Yeah. There's got to be some reason he keeps coming back, right? What is going to be the biggest surprise for the community next year in Fortuna? Is there anything that you're kind of excited about, whether it's people being aware of it yet or not? Something that you can share, obviously, isn't going to mess things up.
I mean, there's a couple things I can think of. One, you know, it's going to be interesting to see the police move to their new facility. And that in and of itself.
Because they're out of your building or because they're into
then,
the new building?
Then City Hall essentially will be doubling in size. And what can we do with that space, right? So I think most people haven't really, they thought, oh, there's a new police facility. But the part that most people probably aren't thinking about is, oh, well, we'll have another half of City Hall. And right now I'm thinking that could be a planning and community development. So when people come in and have projects, instead of having everybody come to our finance window and then, you know, be ushered aside, that there would be a separate window for planning and building separate from the rest of the administrative functions.
You're going to keep the bars there?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so.
Security bars before those rumors start.
Yeah. I haven't really thought about it. So I'm getting ready to start looking at floor plans because I expect that we'll probably have the police moving into the new facility around March.
Now, do you have to go through all the architectural designs and reviews and all that stuff, or can... You know, I guess in the old days, the back of a napkin, doodle out what you want and then kind of have that.
Right
be
now,
the
I don't think we're contemplating a remodel. It's kind of like, okay, how do we use the existing office space?
Who rip out a couple there? Walls and not worry about it.
There could be some minor things that perhaps our staff could do. But, you know, aside from like painting and getting the carpets cleaned and just trying to give it a nice look before we move in, take advantage of it being vacant to clean it up, you know, and, and then think
you're
about
not,
how
you're
we
not
use
saying
that
the carpets are really dirty and ratty and
no.
ugly right now, are
no,
you?
No, they're relatively new, but I think it's always good when you're going to put people in a new space to do a once over.
Yeah, that would kind of be cool. A little air freshener?
Yeah, a little air freshener. Open the windows for a few days, put some paint on there, and put a little carpet cleaning.
Decopify?
Yeah. Change the energy.
Well, you know, if somebody's listening when you get back to the shop now, huh?
We can't have our community development department going in there and feeling like they're law enforcement. That would not be what good.
No, that would reinforce where they are.
Not our community development department.
The typical one.
Yeah.
That they might run into
in stereotypical
various jurisdictions, yes. The county is looking at putting on the ballot another tax that goes, I get. Would that impact Fortuna? I think for a lot of folks, if there's a countywide, is it in the incorporated? Is it in the unincorporated? Is it everybody? Do you get brought into those loops of information when they're starting to talk about this stuff to see?
Short answer is yes. You know, there's awareness. Michelle Bushnell does a great job in keeping the city informed of what's happening. So she let us know, but. Yeah, there. I think the county's been contemplating a 1% tax, sales tax for transportation, and it's interesting. You know, one of the things that we, you know, this,
can Eureka and Trinidad participate at 1%? I thought there was a cap.
The county, I think, got a legislative change to allow it to be the net tax to be in excess of 10%, and Eureka already is. I think I can't remember. They're nine something.
Nine and change. Yeah.
Yeah, and. Fortuna, we have a 0.75 on top of everything else. So I think we're 8.5. So we have some room. So theoretically that would, you know, it could take up capacity that the city could otherwise go for. You know, there's been some folks talking about the importance of a public safety tax. Right now, paying for law enforcement or even fire is very competitive. It's hard to keep people. And so, you know, our council hasn't really talked about anything, but I know there's some desire to shore up our finances so we don't lose officers to other cities who are, you know, like Arcata and Eureka are paying large bonuses. I think it's $50,000 for a lateral transfer. And, you know, we need to stay competitive. Otherwise, we're going to start to lose our law enforcement officers. So there's been some people talking about how can we generate revenue, which the obvious one would be a public safety tax, right? So it could be concerning if the county did a tax and it's in direct competition with something that the city wants to do.
We're both on the ballot at the same time.
Right. You know, I think when you put a bunch of taxes on the ballot, people are like, no.
Now, if it's under the terminology called bond, we don't seem to find a bond that we don't like in the state of California. So.
Yeah, Fortuna might be a little different in that regard. But you know, I'm not sure. You know, the other thing that, you know, we haven't talked about it. We haven't discussed the county's road tax as a council yet, but you know what does concern me is it takes that tax revenue and then it takes it away from the city and it's used in the unincorporated areas. And you know, I think the city would really want to see some kind of distribution that includes something coming back to the city instead of going right to the county and being used outside of the city limits. So
some kind of a ratio,
something instead of nothing. You know, and that's kind of, you know, the way Measure Z's gone. The city's done pretty well. We've had some regional positions that we've staffed, you know, using Measure Z funds. But by and large, a lot of it goes from the incorporated areas to the unincorporated areas. And so.
Yeah, I would think that would be an interesting discussion for us to be involved listening to. Because if Eureka used the same argument.
Right.
Well, okay. You know, it's not like Eureka. Well, I guess they are torn up now with those bulb out things, but. By and large, you compare the city of Eureka to county roads.
Right.
County roads are in a whole lot worse shape, but if all those dollars stayed in Eureka that were generated in Eureka,
right,
kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, but then the counter argument is, you know, everybody shops in Eureka from Garberville to Trinidad or, you know, even north of there. So everybody's going to come go to Costco. Everybody's going to go to the shopping in Eureka. So is that fair for Eureka? Well, if it's fair for Eureka to see that tax go away, then why would it be fair for Fortuna to see a portion? So,
right.
You know, that's the political part of this whole thing.
That's what would make the conversation interesting to listen in on.
Well, and as a representative for a city, of course, you know, if there's going to be a transportation tax, we want to see our piece because we don't have enough transportation funds either. And so a tax levied in the city, of course, the city would want to see some of that come back. And I don't know that the county's put that on the table at all.
Would that, I mean, it would seem like it could have the potential of starting a similar battle that we had with car dealers for a while.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You know, so now in order to be able to get that lion's share, the fair share, now you start going after big boxes. Or you start going after car dealership, you know, the big ticket items to be able to get that fair share.
And now the sales tax goes back to where people are buying, you know, where the people live who bought the car.
Because that's trackable. If you had, let's say, a Lowe's came in. Or a major appliance, you know, regional major appliance dealer or distribution center came in that had retail, dropped in Fortuna.
Right.
Okay, nobody's going to trace where that oven goes.
Right. It's a benefit leaves. For the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would think there could be a potential battle for those communities that have space to develop. You win.
If depends on what you develop.
Well, of course.
Right. If you're going to do...
If you put a bunch of service in there, you're not going to win. It's got to be sales tax.
Service is good. I mean, when you create more jobs in the city, it creates people who are buying groceries and buying gasoline and buying those other things that are already there. So I think it's a question of, you know, fairness and equitable and what makes the most sense. So, you know, when you're talking about a tax, I think people feel they are entitled to some portion of it, so...
And rightly so.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by, bud.
My pleasure.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. See everybody tomorrow.